Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Good afternoon, finally. It's 3:13, a little late, but Skype was not giving us a chance. They were holding us up, and then Blob Talk was holding us up. I couldn't get on the site. Good afternoon. This is The Last Word. My name is Michael Lawson. You had just heard, sort of creepily, the theme from Star Trek, the great series that started over 55 years ago, September the 8th, September the 6th in Canada, but September the 8th here on NBC, starring William Shatner, Captain Kirk, who knew every woman, human, and every alien female in the entire galaxy and loved them all. That's right. He loved them all. So, if you have never seen the Star Trek TV series, you must have been living in a tomb. I mean, you should have at least seen the beginning of it with the spaceship in outer space. And then the voice saying, to boldly go where no man has gone before. And if you listen to the show over the years, they changed it to no one and then no. Because they didn't want to say no woman. They said no one has gone before. This was created by that great, great, great physicist, I call him, Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek from Wagon Train. It was supposed to be the ship that went out first into the universe to meet all the headwinds and all the different people and make friendly with everybody while the Earthlings moved out deeper into space. It was supposed to be the wagon train to the stars. Now, I don't know how many people have watched Star Trek. I mean, I don't know how you could not watch Star Trek. And you got to remember, the Star Trek was on for 2 years, and they wanted to cancel it. And they had people wrote it from all over, created it for another year. But Star Trek has been with us for 55 years, over 55 years. I didn't see it when it first came out because I was in the military. I didn't see it till I came home. I think that was 66. Well, maybe I first saw that when I was on leave. When I was on leave, because I'd never seen it before. I heard about it, but I had never seen it before. And it aired September 66 to June 69. It was the first wagon train to the stars. And had 79 episodes over 3 seasons. And if you did not know that Captain Kirk was not the first person who was the captain of the Enterprise. A great star named Jeffrey Hunter was the first captain of the Enterprise. I can't think of his name. But anyway, they had, when the first one, I believe, was called Mantrap, and then when it came back on, captain, James T. Kirk, was the captain, with Leonard Nimoy as the first officer, Spock, and DeForest Kelly and Ed Bones. But the original one had the nurse Chapel. She was one of the commanding officers. So they changed it a little bit, and they changed Spock's appearance so he wasn't so grotesque, and he looked somewhat more like humans looked. And the thing is that I loved it. I love Star Trek. I still love the original one today, even though it's sort of okie-dokie, but I like James T. Kirk. James T. Kirk was not as smart as the captain, who was a... the original. What's his name? Of the Enterprise, who was? Oh, what's his name? With the ball-headed guy. Wasn't as smart as him. Was not as smart as the young lady who was the captain of the Enterprise later on in Voyager. But he was smart, he was smart, but he was the person who was the first captain who was going out into space and had to learn everything. The Voyager captain, she came way after, 100 years later. So all these things, the Klingons and all these other people that were out there, we already knew them. They were on our side. William Shatner, Captain Kirk, he had to first meet these people and then meet the people and communicate with them and make these original people like us. He had to first meet all these people. These people say, hey, what are these people from local yokel Earth way out there? Why are they even coming over here? We didn't ask them to come over here. Hey, it was Wagon Train. Ward Bond. He was going out in the universe to meet all these people. So Star Trek, the generations of Star Trek, there was many of them. They had to go where no man has gone before. And, Riker was a Johnny-come-lately. Well, he was the young guy, you know, in with Next Generations. That was after James T. Kirk. So you got to remember, you got to take everything that James T. Kirk, everything he did, and you had to take that and learn, sit and learn with him. You were in the booster seat with him. That's what it was. You were in the booster seat learning everything that came after Star Trek, the original series. There were many, many, many different Star Trek franchises. I mean, we have stuff now that's on TV, and if you listen, if it's updated, you'll see they mention now and then something about Star Trek themes that they'll have in them. I mean, you know, they had motion pictures, like Star Trek, the motion picture, and then, of course, the most famous one of all, The Wrath of Khan. And he had Search of Spock. And then they had The Voyage Home. And then they had The Final Frontier. Then they had The Undiscovered Country. And then with Next Generations, oh, man, Next Generations, that started out with, I cannot remember who, oh, well, Patrick Stewart was Captain Jean-Luc Picard. And he started out, he was the next captain after the Enterprise, after the first Enterprise. And it was fabulous. And after that, you had, oh, geez. I mean, the people that were in the in Next Generations, then they gave up to having more and more Star Treks. Next Generations, they had, let's see, who they have as Next Generation. The USS Enterprise. They had the USS Enterprise at that. And their famous thing was NCC-1701-D. That was the D was showed you because A was the first Enterprise. So they were up to D now. And that was... another great Star Trek. Let me see if I give it. Well, I guess that's Next Generations. Let me see who came after that. I can't remember now. Let's see if I can look it up here. USS Enterprise. That was the NCC-1701. That was the name of the Enterprise that they used in Jean-Luc Picard's Enterprise. I mean, so they had they strung it along, and they tried to lead you into the reaches of space and showed you the next wagon train that came after Captain Kirk. Because just like we had more wagon trains that moved across the plains, we had more Star Trek Enterprises that came along the plains to greet and settle in different areas of the galaxy. And then we had the space station one. I forgot the name of that. What was the name of that one? That was I cannot remember that one. Let's see if I can look it up here. We've got new ones now out, Picard, and we hit Discovery, which is another great series. I watch them. Can't wait for them to come back on. But the TV series was the first one, which was Star Trek, and then they had... Voyager, and which was the other one, and the Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine. That's what it was. Deep Space Nine. So Captain Kirk, James T. Kirk, is 90 years old. Reason why the Star Trek reference here. He went into outer space. 10 minutes. But he was there. He went there. He went to space. 90 years old. And I wish I could have, I was trying to get a clip of him, of what he said when he came back down. He was so full of emotion, he could hardly talk. That's how emotion he felt. He was so full of emotion, he could hardly speak. And that tells you there has to be something about that look into the blackness of space. There has to be something about that look. When you look into the deep reaches of space and you can look down at our planet and see what it looks like and how beautiful it is. That's what Shatner said. He said, looking into the deepness of space, it looked like it was death. It was so black. But you see, it was just the unknown. And we are very deeply afraid of the unknown as people who have never seen the unknown. As we have never seen the unknown, and we're just that type of animal that does not, and we are an animal compared to other things, but I want everybody to just think about, and I just hoping that everybody saw what and I why am I stuck here? I just hope that everybody saw what William Shatner said about going into space. And what he said, what do you expect when you lift off this planet and go into space? He said, my first thought is to get back to this planet alive. That was his thought. Now, that wouldn't have been Captain Kirk's thought, but we're looking at the generations before Captain Kirk. We are that generation now. Captain Kirk is not even our next generation, my grandson's generation. It's my grandson's grandson's generation. We're talking about 2060, 2070. Maybe. Might be 2080. So that's what we're thinking about now. Captain Kirk, I'm trying to remember, I think that was the second century or 23rd century. So it'd be another 300 years from now. And probably so. So it wouldn't be my grandson's grandsons. It'd be my grandson's, my grandson's, grandson's grandsons. So my grandson, when he grows up, his grandson will, or granddaughter will have grandsons that will be the ones that go out there. I want to get some more. Next week I'll get as much as I can on what he said and what it looked like. But can you picture this earth? He said it was so bright and so colorful, he could not even express it. And he said, I hope I never, ever lose that feeling. It was so, it's a blue like he has never seen before. Brightness like he has never seen before. And this is a man who has been around for 90 years and has probably done more than most. Horse trainer and movie star, been all over the earth, been all over the planet practically. So this, you know, we always take people that have been a fixture in something. We take scientists. We take teachers. We take those people, but we never take ordinary people. They have nothing to do with science, like James T. Kirk. And their explanation of what they see is completely different than what we think we would say. So I just wanted to say a little bit about that before we started the show today. And so let's get on. We're going to go to the next thing. And the next big thing is, hey, Uncle Donald's man is going to receive a criminal referral. And he thinks this is just like it was when his kiss-ass buddy Donald J. Trump was in charge. But Donald J. Trump ain't in charge now. As a matter of fact, that Donald J. Trump might also be getting a criminal referral. Don Lemon talked to some of these people. Some pretty intelligent people that talked about these, how these would be files if they did not talk. Let's listen to that.
Over 24 hours away from the deadline for some of Trump's key allies to appear before the January 6th Select Committee. As I just said, Schiff says, look, we're not messing around here. Criminal contempt charges will be filed quickly if anybody defies a subpoena. How do you see this playing out, Laura?
Well, you know, unlike last time when you had thumbing the nose of people who had previously been subpoenaed, you have a very different White House, a very different Attorney General right now, who has been very adamant about the idea of the rule of law coming first. And what this means, of course, is that subpoenas are supposed to be complied with. The average person couldn't just say, nah, I don't feel like doing that, and ignore it. Remember, anytime somebody wants to challenge the validity of a subpoena or the questions they want to respond to through privilege, you have to still do that on a question-by-question basis. You can't just say, executive privilege might extend, therefore I'm not going to come at all. You have to actually address it. So the idea of using the Department of Justice now to be able to, through a criminal referral, get people to comply is actually something that could, in fact, happen, unlike a very protracted litigation on the civil side that we've seen before.
So, but Laura, Trump is still pulling the strings. I mean, telling his former aides to ignore their subpoenas. Is this obstruction of justice?
It is. It's obstruction of Congress, which is why you have the idea of how you can be held in contempt of Congress. That actually means being able to obstruct what Congress is supposed to be doing. They have a legislative initiative in terms of trying to understand what happened leading up to January 6th. It's a valid legislative purpose. They've expressed it to a select committee. And the idea of telling someone to just say, don't show up at all, because I might assert executive privilege here, again, it's a question-by-question privilege. You don't get to say, I'm not going to answer any question. Privilege only relates to those questions that might be responsive and could have a valid exercise of privilege. There is a former president we're talking about. That privilege belongs to the current incumbent of the White House, and that is Joe Biden, although that's much, you know, debated apparently through the big lie. That is, in fact, Joe Biden who holds the privilege, and he is not the one asserting it.
So, Max, Adam Schiff said that the committee will move as fast as possible. Here he is.
The former president of the United States is still out pushing the big lie, the same big lie that led people to attack this building and beat police officers and put our lives at risk. So, yes, we feel a sense of urgency.
You know, and just today, a Trump crowd that was four times larger than the local police expected gathered in Michigan State Capitol to demand an audit of the 2020 election because Trump told them to. What does this tell you about the dangers ahead?
Well, I think it tells us, Don, that the danger to our democracy is growing because these protests are not really about overturning the 2020 election. That's impossible. There's no way for Biden to be shoved out of office right now. What this is really about is setting the stage for 2024 and preventing Biden from winning another term or any other Democrat from winning another term and basically getting Trump back into office by hook or by crook. And this is essentially conditioning the Republican Party to throw out votes that don't go their way and intimidating Republican office holders so that fewer of them will stand up to the Trump coup next time than occurred in after the last election. So I think this is a real danger signal for our democracy, the fact that Trump is still out there pushing the big lie that he is conditioning the Republican Party to go along with them. And in fact, something like 60% of Republicans still want him to be their leader. 60% still think that Trump was legitimately elected. That's a huge blinking warning sign for the next several years of our democracy.
You have a new piece out explaining that you're not a Democrat, but you will vote for them no matter what. And here's what you write in part. You said, I'm a single-issue voter. My issue is the fate of democracy in the United States. Simply put, I have no faith that we will remain a democracy if Republicans win power. You say the choice is Trump or our democracy. Are Democrats doing enough to explain what's really at stake in these elections? And are they paying close enough attention, meaning Democrats other than the folks in Washington?
Well, I think even the folks in Washington, a lot of them are very easy to get wrapped up in the current political battles. And so there's a huge, you know, Donnybrook going on over is the Build Back Better bill. Is that going to be $3.5 trillion? Is it going to be $2 trillion? What have you? And I think a lot of people are losing sight of the larger issues. It's not a matter of you know, how much you're spending here and there. It's really a much more basic, fundamental question. Are we going to have a democracy or not? And what I'm saying is that if Republicans can win elections in 2022, that is going to set the stage for a Republican coup in 2024 that could well be more successful than the one they attempted in 2020. And really, the only way to prevent that from happening is to vote for Democrats at all levels and state legislatures, governors, House, and Senate. That's the only way to safeguard our democracy. And I'm saying that as somebody who is not a Democrat. I have disagreements with Democrats on a number of issues, but I just think that right now, all small-D Democrats have to unite and support big-D Democrats to safeguard our democracy from the increasingly authoritarian Republican Party that Donald Trump is leading.
Well, our ABC's Jonathan Carl is revealing new details about the video Trump posted to Twitter hours into the insurrection where he said the election was stolen, called his supporters very special. You know the one I'm talking about. According to Carl's new book,
Trump boasted about the crowd size and had to tape that message several times because he neglected to tell the rioters to leave the Capitol. What does that tell you about his state of mind that day?
Well, isn't it coming full circle that a presidency that began with trying to talk about and be obsessed with crowd sizes was equally concerned at the end of his presidency after he had already lost the election? And the focus should have rightly been on what was the attack on the citadel of our democracy. And one thing that's so always been very curious for people about the former president has been the idea of a focus almost exclusively on his own incumbency as opposed to what the presidency is supposed to be about, the future successors as well, the presidential administration going forward. And so you see here somebody who had to be coaxed essentially and persuaded to try to call off a crowd, which included, by the way, people who were calling for the hanging of his own vice president. And I don't recall any of the Republicans who were on the floor that day who had to be taken away, who had to go to safe shelter, opening the arms to the people who were coming in. Why? Because they knew that they were there to do no good and to actually harm. And so if the President of the United States with the power, the person who's able to answer the question, you and what army, if instead of focusing on trying to ensure the safety of our democracy, you focus on how many people were willing to join the orbit of yes men and women, then that's really cause for concern, as Max was speaking about. Just to underscore one point, if you're really concerned, frankly, about democracy, you have to also be concerned about the attempt to avoid or be or make sure people cannot get to the polls through the rolling back of voting cases and rolling back of voting rights in this country, because that's just as much about what we need to preserve as anything else.
All right. Thank you both. Thank you, Laura, Max. Appreciate it.
Now, we still have this problem. You know, a lot of people, including myself, thought that, and I still think this to a certain point, because we're still early on this. I feel we're still early on this, that this orange man who used to be in the White House doesn't have a leg to stand on and is only doing all this lying so he has enough money to grift from all the grifter goodies givers out there that believe in him so he can pay for the rest of his life and his children's lives, because they have never worked in their life. You got to remember, they have no money. The only money they had was the money that he got them through foreign product lines that they were selling or grifting out of the big grifter jar that they could take some money out of, which he gave them. He didn't let them put their hands in the money jar. He took out money and gave them $1.50. How much money? $1.50? Oh, get back to the rich? Okay, I'll give you money. The only one that actually did anything on their own as before he got there was his son-in-law and his daughter, Ivanka. She had like 10 or 12 different patents with the Chinese, but they're all going to be gone very shortly if they're not gone already, because when you finally come to find out how she's going to make her money, how much money she's collecting, we know it's illegal, and his two boys are managing a dying business model and business, the Trump business. They no longer have a cookie jar they can stick their money in and get batches of money out anytime they wanted, because the Attorney General of New York stopped that foundation,
which they wasn't a foundation. I'm sorry, you know, I'm talking, and I don't know if you can hear me. I'm yelling loud, but let me plug in my mic. I got so involved in that last shenanigans.
I was talking like I had my mic plugged in, but my mic wasn't plugged in. Okay. I don't know how much you heard what I was saying, but the grifter-in-chief, I don't believe he'll ever answer a contempt violation. I believe that's why he's still grifting all those grifter givers out there in the world, so he has enough money to pay one guy who's going to be his real man, who's actually going to finally get some money out of this cheap tightwad. Because no lawyer wants to back him, and he doesn't pay them. He said, yeah, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And it comes to pay, well, you didn't do this right. Look, I don't have to pay. You didn't complete your task. No. Well, he's going to have that, because if he goes to jail, he's going to have somebody to keep him out of jail. And believe me, there's a whole lot of people who want him to go to jail.
The clock goes on, the scheming persists, and the danger will never recede. He has done it before. He will do it again. What are the odds, if left in office, that he will continue trying to cheat? I will tell you, 100%. Not 5, not 10, or even 50, but 100%. If you have found him guilty and you do not remove him from office, he will continue trying to cheat in the election until he succeeds. Then what shall you say?
Then what shall you say? Adam Schiff put it right to you. Then what shall you say? I'm telling you. What shall you say then? It's amazing. It's amazing. What shall you say? Hey, I didn't lie to you. I never lied to you. I told you every single thing I was doing. The problem is, he did lie to you. He lied to every one of you grifters. Grifter givers, I should say. He is the grifter. Him and his daughter and his two sons and his son-in-law. They are the grifters. That's right. They're the grifters. I've been lying to you forever. They have been lying to you forever. And what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it is the question. What can you do about it? This man has taken the whole idea of grifting. Matter of fact, off that subject for a minute, there was a film, and I believe the one I'm talking about, I'm not talking about the latest one, because I know there was a second one, which was in color. But the original one that I saw, James Garner was in it. You know, he used to play, some of you older people might know, Maverick, the original Maverick. He was in it, and it was was so freaking amazing how a grifter actually works. A grifter actually works. And I'm telling you, boy, oh boy, it is so amazing. It is so amazing how I'm looking at the thing here now. How a grifter can go right to you. Go right to the place where you want to be. And convince you that everything you saw, heard, and believed is completely backwards. That's their job. That's what makes them great. They will convince you that every single thing that you have heard in your lifetime, that you believe, ain't so. That's so they will convince you. They will have the right. They have the right to convince you that you don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's right. You don't have the, you don't know, what you heard is absolutely garbage. Listen, let me tell you what you should have heard and how you should have heard it. Because, boy, oh boy, when a grifter gets on the grifting, he's got everybody. Got everybody. You know, there's a, I tell you who, if you get back to it a little bit, what the grifter is. A grifter is just like that person in the Broadway show and the film, The Music Man. And Ethel Merman said it right one time. Ethel Merman was a famous Broadway star, big, loud voice, sing, rough. The song that I play most of the time in regards to Donald J. Trump, there's no business like show business. That's right. I play that once in a while. And let me get rid of these. You know, this is driving me nuts. Have you, ladies and gentlemen out there, been involved with these daggone telemarketers calling your cell phone? I mean, it's just completely outrageous. It's completely outrageous. It is just completely outrageous. I mean, I just can't understand why we can't find these people. Why? And well, I understand why. Because I think one of the main, my grandson told me, one of the main things is that they want to get your cell phone information. And when they get your cell phone information, they can tap in and get other stuff that you have. So, you know, this is what's going on in the world today. This is what's going on in the world today. Now, I wanted to talk about Texas also. Texas, unbelievable. Hey, when I liked the Dallas Cowboys, I didn't know that Texas was going to be like this. Well, hey, Dallas and Houston are probably the best two places in Texas. Dallas and Houston. So, I don't know. If we get a new governor down there, the governor don't have many powers. We need a new lieutenant governor. Because lieutenant governor has more power than the governor down there. That's why George W., when he was governor down there, he had no power what was going on. Those people were running all rings around him, telling him they were doing this. And they weren't doing a damn thing what he was talking, what he wanted. Nothing. So people thought, oh, yeah, he's so great. He's a great conservative. We want him. They didn't know about him. They were all these other clowns that were the real true conservatives. Hey, he wishes he wasn't one of them now himself. But he can't say that. He can't say that. Now they're pushing this, but they have this ban, I think, after 6 weeks for abortion. And Supreme Court decided not to hear it. So they went around and said, oh, yeah, they didn't want to hear it, so therefore we're going to push it. And they pushed it out and started... Hey, they started a thing in a lot of other southern states. I think the one that's really going to break the bank is Kentucky, I think, where they said, hey, no way, Jose. And they went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's going to hear them. Now, the reason why... they don't believe that the Texas information on abortion will pass is because it's so outlandish. You might as well say you can't have a baby, or you can't, because I am for abortion. I think there's in a certain time frame, a woman doesn't even know she's pregnant. 6 weeks, 90% of the people who had babies or didn't have babies didn't know they were pregnant in 6 weeks. You don't even feel anything sometimes. And sometimes you just feel something, well, maybe I'm just a little run down, or maybe I see the doctor. And then when you go to the doctor says, guess what, mother-to-be? But then you also have the conditions where you have some rotten son of a bitches in your family and other parts of the country that just want to create mayhem. And you get raped. A woman will get raped by her own brother, her own father, uncle, stranger on the street. You should not have to go through all that trauma and have a baby with someone who's not your even relative, that you did not even want to, that you weren't even associated with. Like an uncle, cousin you've never seen before, or maybe a father you didn't want to associate with, or a brother you didn't want to associate with. Hey, sometimes you're playing around and you get pregnant. Whatever the condition is, It should be your right as the female to not have that, not to be thrown into that position. You should not have those rights taken away. And guess what, conservative people out there? You all say, oh, yeah, well, the Lord says this, the Lord says, yeah, and yeah, oh, yeah, we should, we'll take, you don't take care of those babies when they're born. When she goes into the hospital to have that baby, who's paying for that? And when she comes out of that hospital, not knowing anything, how to take care of a child, who pays for that? And by the way, oh, yeah, by the way, we don't hear from you conservatives anymore. All we hear is, look at those slackers. All they want to do is have babies. That's the first thing we hear. Or, ain't none of my business. I don't know about that. I want to know about that. But you won't stop it from happening. And you can't say we're going to make all up. Girls 7 years old, 6 years old, over, we're going to make them sterile. This ain't China. This ain't Korea, Africa. Countries of the Middle East. You don't want to know from nothing. And believe me, it costs a lot to take care of a child. Every once a month, I believe it is, maybe it might be more times, depending on how sick the female is, to go see a doctor. First, getting a doctor. Doctor isn't doing this for $1.50 an hour. Even that might be too much. I'm not going to give you good advice for $1.50 either. So what are you supposed to do? Who's supposed to pay for this? Who's supposed to say, don't worry about it, we got you covered? Oh, well, we don't want to know about that. We just make sure you don't have any children. Then they have this other thing with it. They have what they call a little added thing to this no abortion in the state of Texas. We're going to find out that if you go for abortion, there'll be a person that's watching you. And that person will be able to collect a bounty on you or whoever does the dirty deed. Matter of fact, you don't have to do the dirty deed. If you get a taxi cab to take you to the place where you want to get the abortion, the taxi cab driver, whoever she or he may be, will also be involved in the fine. $10,000 bounty. Put it up on the side of the road, on the houses and on the trees. Bounty, $10,000, anybody getting an abortion? You know them. Just report them. And you get $10,000. What am I going to tell you? That's right. That's what I want to do. $10,000. It's in the bounty. But, hey, let me ask you something. What if states and other part of the country, since this is not going to be a federal law, what about states and other part of the country that said, well, hell, that's bull. You can have abortion here. Oh, no? Or here's what we'll do. Since this was passed by the state, this no bounty deal, along with the the bounty, we have a bounty for all those people that carry guns. Heard this yesterday on Dateline with one of the former judges, Nicole Wallace's, when Nicole Wallace was interviewing. What if the state of New York or Vermont or Connecticut said, hey, we're going to pass a law that's going to get all you conservatives. You can't carry guns. If we see you have a gun, or we know you have a gun, and we know where you got the gun, we're going to collect the bounty on you, because we're going to pass that in our house and get it ratified in the Senate. So if you got a gun, we want $10,000. As a matter of fact, we might push up to $20,000. That had to get a lot more people involved. Now, you know, in New York City, you can't carry a gun. Chicago, you can't carry no gun. But there's plenty of people getting shot in Chicago and New York. So they got guns. Oh, you're illegal? Well, they would become illegal. Anybody that has a gun would have to turn them in. And if you didn't turn every one of them in, we're going to collect the bounty on you. Because I'm sure you people have showed your gun collection to your close friends. But for $20,000, how close are these friends going to be? And you be watching. They had to create a new court. The Federal Bounty Court. In Texas, you get them on abortion. New York City, Chicago, Connecticut, Vermont. We'll get you for carrying a gun, even owning a gun. Even knowing that you didn't own a gun, but you found it later. It was in two pieces. It was taken apart. But you wonder how that would work.
May soon be severely curtailed. Today, during oral arguments, before the United States Supreme Court, including liberal Justice Stephen Breyer, seeming to side with Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron in his quest to defend a state law that would functionally ban abortions in Kentucky after 15 weeks. An official opinion in the case is not expected until next year, but it's just one of many cases the court will hear this year that would fundamentally reshape the rights of women in this country, depending on its outcome. Late last night, the Department of Justice once again urged the courts to intervene and suspend Texas's near-complete ban on abortion there. DOJ writes this, quote, if Texas's scheme is permissible, no constitutional right is safe from state-sanctioned sabotage of this kind. Joining our coverage, former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance, now a law professor at the University of Alabama and an MSNBC legal analyst. Yamisha's still here. I want to read a little bit more, Joyce, from the Justice Department's filing. It feels important, and this is something I've been asking you and Neil about for weeks now. They write, quote, a state might ban the possession of all handguns in the home, prohibit independent corporate campaign advertising, and deputize its citizens to seek bounties for each firearm or advertisement. Partisans of one stripe or another might cheer these outcomes, but they should horrify anyone committed to the principle that this diverse nation is bound by one constitution. What do you think of that? DOJ is taking a strong stand here in giving the Supreme Court, who will ultimately decide this case, every possible opportunity to reconsider their earlier decision to permit the law to go into effect. The point that they're making here is that we're not a country with one set of rules that apply to every kind of case except abortion and a separate form of jurisprudence in abortion cases. We are not a country that's meant to permit vigilante justice schemes like the one that Texas uses here for abortion as a way to get around the Constitution, as an end run around the rule of law. DOJ throws down the gauntlet with this filing, saying, you might like what happens in Texas. you may like it a lot less when, for instance, the state of Vermont or the state of New York decides to collect bounties using vigilantes for people who own guns or exercise other rights that conservatives favor. In other words, one country, one set of rules, one law that everyone has to follow. Texas can't get around it when it comes to abortion. And that's the decision that DOJ sets up for the Supreme Court to ultimately have to make.
So, how do you think that Joyce Vance is the judge I was trying to think of? Federal judge. What do you think about that, conservatives? People who swear by their conservative values. What do you think of that? Well, if they can ban something that's fairly protected under the law, why can't we pass something that you guys want so dearly? Guns. Now, guns kill. Babies born don't kill. They might kill the mother. Maybe when they get to be 25, 30, they might kill somebody else. But they ain't killing anybody when they're born. Guns kill. Oh, I know. It's not the gun that kills. It's the person who has the gun that kills. Yes, I know. Well, if the person didn't have a gun, maybe they wouldn't kill anybody. Food makes you fat. Don't eat food, you don't get fat. So guns kill, but if you don't have somebody who pulls the trigger on the gun, they won't kill anybody. But see, that's not the same thing. Because you see, a baby who's born cannot take your life. The baby needs people to protect it. But guns kill. So that's something that we do need to get rid of. We have more guns than people in this country. We have more bullets than the world has people. So why don't we get rid of that? How many people think a year we would be saving if we had no guns here? Or a few guns. England has no problem with it. Rolled up. You can do that. Roll it up. But this would be a great, great problem for the conservative, and I should not say Republican Party, because excuse me, there is no more Republican Party. That's gone out the window like Kris Kringle. Using Kris Kringle as the name. You could say Kris Kringle to most of these kids today. They would not have any idea who you were talking about. You talk about Santa Claus, they know who you're talking about. So just think about that. What would happen to court if the court voted on no more guns? Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, getting to something that I wanted to talk about with this clown prince, getting back to him. Donald J. Trump. You know, there was a, he, you know, He's completely dumb. He didn't know anything about it. He don't know how the government runs. He don't know who to talk to. But he had nobody. You know, if you ever saw the movie, I believe it's called Dave, where he became president of the United States by accident because he looked just like the president of the United States. But Dave was a person who worked for the city or the county. I can't remember who. No, he didn't. He worked. He was a privately owned job that he ran. I'm getting another daggone telemarketer from Yuma, Texas. Can you believe that? Anyway, Dave had a business that he ran, and his business was to find people jobs. That was his business. He would try to get you a job. And he was doing pretty good at it. He made a good amount of money. And one day he was sitting in his place and these guys came in, long coats, stoic looking, said, "You gotta come with us." He said, "Why? You gotta come with us? Why?" He said, "Get in the car." He took him to this place near the White House. We didn't know that it was part of the White House. And they took him downstairs in this closed room. And he showed him this person laying on the table with machines hooked up to him and IVs and everything. And he said, "That's the president." He said, "Yes." "He's in a coma." "In a coma? Well, get a doctor." "Well, you see, we got doctors here." "What do you need me for?" "Have you noticed anything?" He looked just like him. Kevin Kline was playing the part. Looked just like him. He said, "We want you until he comes out of this, or if he doesn't, then we'll have to say that he died, but we want you to be the president of the United States." He left. "What? Me? I don't want to be the president." "You don't have to be. I'm the Speaker of the House. I will take care of it." Not speaking. He wasn't Speaker of the House. He was his chief of staff. He said, "I'll take care of it. You don't have to do anything. Just sign some stuff. You don't have to sign anything. We got his signature on a template." Just for a few weeks. He said, "Do I get to you get everything the president does? You live here?" He said, "Oh, man." He said, "Oh, wait a minute. He's got a wife." He said, "We'll take care of her." He said, "As a matter of fact, you don't have to worry about it. They don't even sleep together. They're going to get a divorce as soon as his presidency is over with. You don't have to worry about it. He doesn't even see it." He said, "Oh, man. Okay." That was the story. That was the story about Dave. It was a great story. And he was an accountant also. Well, not an accountant exactly, but he knew how to run books and whatnot. And he started liking it. Be president. "Oh, man, you got just good food. You can dress up." He said, "What happened to that guy? You just go up there and start imitating him. We're going to teach you how to walk like him and look like him, how he shrugs his shoulders, because he's not out in public that much, because he hates the people." So that was the whole thing. That's what he's going to do. Meanwhile, he's studying to become president of the United States. And he's learning out all his gestures and all his smiles. All his smiling how he held his hands, and how he would walk, same size, everything, clothes fit him, everything. Oh, by the way, Sojourner Weaver was his wife, and the guy that was supposed to be chief of staff was Frank Langella. No, Frank Langella, right? He played Dracula. You remember? Frank Langella played Dracula. Well, anyway, this one was in the 90s, early 90s, 93, I think. So, this is a little while ago. But you got to see it. It's funny. And it shows what happens when you get the right person in the right place at the right time. Now, the thing that Frank Langella forgot and all his cronies that, hey, he's president and he's straight and he don't believe in any of the stealing the money from the poor because he's working with the poor. He wants to get them jobs. When they came to him with the budget, and what it was cutting out schools and cutting money from the poor, he said, what's this all about? And he went to Frank Langella, and Frank Langella said, don't worry about that. He says, but on the president, I said, I couldn't go out there and do it. Well, yes, you can. We told you you could. But I don't want to do anything like this. He said, you'll do what we want because you're nothing but a little ant. You're a roach. You're nothing. We take care. I take care of you. And he says, don't have any ideas. He's meeting with the entire cabinet. Langella couldn't stop it because he ordered, I want to have a meeting with the cabinet over the budget. And everybody got together and they're all meeting. And Frank Langella said, wait a minute, you can't meet with the, he's in there talking to press secretary and he's talking to a couple of others who didn't know that he was fake. Didn't like him because he was a nasty son of a bitch, this guy who was the president. So he's having a meeting with his chief, with his cabinet, and Frank Langella says, you can't have a meeting with the cabinet. You're not the president. He says, yes, I am. And he said this in front of all the about four or five people in the office who did not know. And he says, well, yes, but you should have told me. He says, you know now. Don't you have some other work to do? Tells it to Frank Langella. So Frank Langella can't say nothing. Then you got the president in the bottom of the Capitol on a stretcher trying to be kept alive. So they're going over the budget, and he said, "Well, what are you doing all this for? Why did you cut this out?" He's saying this to the budget chief. He said, "Well, we thought it was better. Why did you think it was better?" Well, because he said, "But you cut out this school." For poor kids. Well, we really don't need it. We don't really need it. Yes, you do. They can't pay for it themselves. He says, okay. He says, oh, should I go on national television and say, this is how the budget breaks down? The budget chief doesn't want it because he says, we don't need to take care of poor children? No, leave this in there. What else can we, how about this right here that calls for giving a grant to this brewing company to open up two main hubs of more brewing places in two different states, or four different states, something like that. Can't they afford to do this themselves? So yes. Then why don't we take that money out of there and give it to the school? And yes, Mr. President. So he does all this, and so Johnny Weaver, this school was her project. And she had found out that the president through the chief of staff, because she didn't speak to the president, was going to cut the program. And she came right into their apartment at the Capitol and told them, why do you want to do this to hurt these children? He says, what children? And he said, he was taking a shower. He didn't know it. And she comes and looks at him and says, they look a little different, but he says, why do you want to do this? He says, well, I won't take care of it. Yes, you did. You got rid of it. So that's why he went in there and called the budget meeting. And when he put it back in, she says, thank you very much for putting it back in. He says, well, I didn't look at it, and somebody else took it out. He said, but it won't happen again. And so she knew this something was wrong here. So it goes on. It's a great story about how she falls in love with the man she married, but actually it's not the man she married. Frank Langella is trying to fix how he can get rid of this. The only way he can do this is kill the real president and not help him anymore. But Dave says, you know, I just want to pass something, get something done, and then I'm going to get out of here. They can't force me to do this. So he calls his best friend, who's an accountant, and his has him come in and go over the books, our budget. And he says, who's running this organization? Criminals? He said, look, I want you to fix this. He found out when he was in there, he said, you know, you shouldn't be in here. He said, playing the president. He said, well, I'm playing it because they asked me to, because the real president is sick and someone is dying. He said, oh, my God. He said, oh, we're all going to go to jail. He said, oh, just fix this part. So he fixes the budget, and everybody's getting what they want. They got money left over for the military. They have plenty of money. There was a lot of money just that was being thrown around and being wasted, being held in escrow, so people, whenever they need some money, could get money. So he says, well, I got to get out of here. So he says, I am going to have one big meeting with both the people that run this country. I'm going to have a meeting, a joint assembly of everybody. Senate, House, everybody. I want to have a meeting. So he's having this meeting, and of course, when Frank Langella finds out about it, he says, you can't do this. That's what I'm doing. And meanwhile, during these months that go on, she knows this is not her husband. And she introduces herself. I'm Mrs. Sutcher. He says, I'm Mr. Sutcher. He says, you look just like him. He says, but you know, I think I like you much better. So they're getting along great. So when he comes in there and says, look, you can't do this. I'm running this. I'm president. He says, no, you're not. And then she comes out and says, look, you're here? And he says, yes. Well, what are you doing here? He says, I've come to make up for my husband. So it's the cat's out of the bag now. He's, he runs out of it. I got to do something. So what he plans on doing, David Klein, is to have this meeting in the Senate, and then pass out like he had a stroke or something. So when he does that, he has it all planned with his Secret Service and whatnot, and they take him out. They take him through the tunnels. They put the real president in the ambulance, and he gets out, goes up the side, goes across the hill, goes back to work. So that's how he gets out of it. And then the real president dies later, a couple of days later, and she leaves. And meanwhile, you know, in the end, they meet together. She comes in looking for a job. He said, well, isn't that the first lady? And he says, yeah, right. And they close the windows. But anyway, it's a great film. But we have a problem now. this DJD orange man could not get anything done, because even his own attorney general was going to get out of it. He didn't want to be involved with him anymore, because the man is a complete moron. He didn't realize what a moron he was. And just like, remember what the robot used to say in Robbie the Robot? Remember what he used to say? Danger, 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 Will Robinson. Danger, Will Robinson. Well, who was a nobody. Still is a nobody, but he's got, he's a lawyer, but he's about to lose his license. He's the one, this guy, his name is John Eastman. He's the one that drew up these plans for how to take over the state capitals and have the vice president say he's not going to authorize the elections in these various states.
Anybody who doubts the risk that we face needs only look at the Eastman memo. Trump lawyer John Eastman literally put in writing a blueprint for stealing a presidential election. And once Trump gains control of state election boards, don't kid yourself into thinking that he won't try it again. Now the conservative think tank that employs Eastman, the Claremont Institute, is, no surprise, trying to whitewash his role in the attempted coup. We'll get to that tonight, too. For better or for worse, this country has long had a two-party system, which, although sometimes messy, has managed to honor the will of the voters. The problem now is one party has decided they don't have to do that anymore. In his latest column, Michael Gerson, former speechwriter to George W. Bush, plainly said, what should be evident to every American who cares about their future. Trump has strengthened his identification with the seditious forces he unleashed on January 6th. He has embraced ever more absurd and malicious conspiracy theories. He has shown even less stability, humanity, responsibility, and restraint, and his support among Republicans has grown. Gerson warns that it is increasingly evident that the nightmare prospect of American politics, unified Republican control of the federal government in the hands of a reelected, empowered Donald Trump in 2025, is also the likely outcome. As the only party left that actually supports democracy, it's incumbent that Democrats prevent that outcome. Because Republican victories in 2022 and 2024 could literally mean the end of free elections. And yet for Democrats, the challenges of winning and retaining office is twofold. They'll have to overcome the built-in disadvantages at the ballot box that are baked into the system to advantage rural voters, the apportionment of electoral votes, gerrymandered districts, and voter suppression, to name just a few. That's why a number of rational pro-democracy Republicans have recently spoken out in support of electing Democrats. As conservative author Max Boot writes, I'm a single-issue voter. My issue is the fate of democracy in the United States. He says, simply put, I have no faith that we will remain a democracy if Republicans win power. Thus, although I'm not a Democrat, I will continue to vote exclusively for Democrats until the GOP ceases to pose an existential threat to our freedom. Max Boot, Washington Post columnist and senior fellow for National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, joins me now, along with Maya Wiley, MSNBC legal analyst and former New York City mayoral candidate. And Max, you know, it is this weird thing where you and I started out on very opposite sides of the world in terms of our beliefs about things like the Iraq War, and we are now on the same side. I have lots of critiques of Democrats myself, but, you know, walk us through your how you got to the point where you're saying, just vote exclusively for Democrats, because I know in Virginia right now, there's a Republican trying to put himself forward. When I look at him, I just see another guy who's going to get pressured to go along and also do whatever it is that Trump wants in 2024 and throw out votes. So are you where I am?
Absolutely, Joy. I mean, this is a time when everybody who is a small D Democrat has to unite in support of the big D Democratic Party. And I mean, kind of the premise of my column was, you know, we're hearing so much about the debates in Washington about the Build Back Better bill. You know, should it be $3.5 trillion? Should it be $2 trillion? Whatever. Honestly, I'm agnostic. I'm not sure what the size of it ought to be. But what I do know for sure is that we should not get so wrapped up in that that we lose sight of the larger stakes here. And I'm hearing people say, oh, you know, if Joe Biden can't get this big bill through Congress, then the Democrats are going to be in big trouble next year. And that may be true, but it shouldn't be true, because anybody out there who cares about the fate of our democracy has to realize that there is no way you can support Republicans under the present circumstances, because this is a party, a lot of which already went along with the coup attempt in January of this year. And since then, all the Republicans who didn't go along with the coup, they're all being purged. You know, being part of the big lie is now becoming a litmus test for the Republican Party. Even though we see new revelations almost every day about Donald Trump's attempt to overthrow our democracy, more than 60% of Republicans still support him. And the only Republican office holders who don't support him are in danger of losing re-election. They've, you know, Liz Cheney's already lost her leadership position in the House. So there is no way I can look at the Republican Party as currently constituted and have any confidence that if they win power in 2022, in 2024, that American democracy will survive. And that's why I'm saying we have to vote for Big D Democrats until the threat to our democracy passes.
Okay, I don't know what happened here, but it just cut off. Anyway, so Max Boot,
who has been a diehard down in the involved with the conservative movement his whole life, says, you Republicans and independents, you can't afford to get this grifter, this criminal, let him back in office. You can't. And this is the only way to prove it. Now, I want to do something on something else, a major story that happened this week, but, well, maybe I will have a chance to get it in. Let's just play this here for a minute.
Good morning. Welcome into First Take. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's get right into it here. John Gruden resigned as head coach of the Raiders in the wake of his racist, misogynistic, and anti-gay emails being exposed during an investigation of the Washington football team. He announced his resignation in a statement on Monday night, shortly after the New York Times reported that he used misogynistic and anti-gay language in numerous emails during a 7-year period that ended in 2018. The Times story came after Adam Schefter reported the NFL had sent the Raiders additional Gruden emails to review emails that were on top of the one that surfaced last week, in which Gruden used a racist comment in referring to NFLPA Executive Director Demora Smith and other emails in which Gruden disparaged NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell with a vulgar description. The Raiders said assistant Rich Bisaccia was Raiders. I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction. Thank you to all the players, coaches, staff, and fans of Raider Nation. I'm sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone. Raiders' racist comment in referring to NFLPA Executive Director Demora Smith and other emails in which Gruden disparaged NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell with a vulgar description. The Raiders said assistant Rich Bisaccia will serve as interim coach. As you can see, John Gruden put out that statement on your screen. I have resigned as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction. Thank you to all the players, coaches, staff, and fans of Raider Nation. I'm sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone. Raiders owner Mark Davis adding, I have accepted John Gruden's resignation as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Interesting timing. These emails were sent while John Gruden was working for ESPN as a lead analyst for Monday Night Football, and his resignation announced during Monday Night Football last night. Keyshawn is getting set to join us right now. Obviously, he just finished his radio show. He played with a unique perspective, playing 2 years under John Gruden. We will get to him momentarily. Welcome into First Take. Thank you for being here. I'm Molly Karam Rose, Stephen A. Smith. I'll start with you, Stephen A., as Keyshawn gets set here.
Yes.
What's your reaction to all of this? Because this was shocking as I was watching the game. It was really coming down throughout and at halftime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by the way, everybody, like you said, Keyshawn will be here in a second. Just
yep.
Changing.
Walking out right now,
radio,
yep.
Just finished doing his radio show. I got to get this out of my ear. So much static's in my ear right now. To say that this is stunning doesn't even begin to describe what this situation is.
Yeah.
Let me get this out of the way first.
Real quick, Keyshawn is here. Good morning. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for the hustle.
No problem.
And grateful to have you.
Yeah, absolutely grateful. Thanks a lot. To say that this is stunning doesn't even begin to describe how we all should feel right now. Couple of things. Number one, yesterday, you weren't here. I was of the mindset that John Gruden shouldn't be fired, shouldn't be suspended, because it was one email from 2011. And then the next thing you know, this avalanche arrived last night. And you learned that it wasn't one email, but many. You learned it wasn't one email that happened in 2011. It was emails that started in like 2010 all the way to 2011, all the way to 2018. And let's get into the particulars, because before I even say all of that, let me say this. John Gruden's career is over. It's over. There's certain things that we are the land of second chances. People make mistakes all the time, and we get all of that. But I cannot imagine even a white male with influence and connections and some degree of power that can overcome what the New York Times reported and what we all now know. John Gruden made racially insensitive comments about Damora Smith, the executive director of the Players Association. And you have a plethora of people in this country that felt that should have been enough. Then we learned that he was against the NFL bringing in a guy like Michael Sam, saying over via emails that the commissioner should not be encouraging then Rams coach Jeff Fisher to draft queers. Then he sat up there, and after all of that, what did he say after that? He goes off, he calls the commissioner the P word. He calls the vice president of the United States the P word. He's against women being officials in the National Football League. I mean, you're insulted blacks, you insulted women, you insulted folks from the gay community. The list
criticized player safety.
And criticized. I was saving that.
I wanted to make sure.
Eric Reed, you know, he said that Eric Reed should be fired for exercising his constitutional rights, because he had every right to do what he did, whether people agree with him or not. The fact of the matter is, you had a right to do it. He said the man should be fired. Everywhere you turn, I mean, he has offended, several groups of people. His career is over. There's certain things, particularly in this day and age, you don't come back from. And John Gruden cannot come back from this. So before I say, I want to hand it off to you, Keyshawn, because I think your words right now are more important than mine, because you played for the man and you were consistent. Like I said yesterday, even when I said, listen, he should be fired based off of the one comment from 2011. I made sure to point out that your words yesterday on your radio show, before anybody had spoken about it, your words, I was like, Keyshawn's been saying this about him for years. Everything he said on the radio, Keyshawn said about John Gruden years and years ago. So your words were very, very consistent. And now they're prophetic and profound, to be quite honest with you. I don't see how he gets away with this. I don't see how he comes back from this. He hasn't gotten away from it, but how he comes back from this. But he ain't the only one. You Bruce Allen, you know, you don't have a job right now. Good luck in getting one. Some of these groups are the owner of Hooters, and it's this little chain, this little clique y'all had going, you know, sending these emails back and forth with one another. This will not be the only domino that will fall.
It's never the only domino that will fall. I mean, it's just the start of everything. I don't even know, where do you start with this situation?
I want to start here. What did you see? What did
years
you
ago?
See as a player? Because you've been saying this for years, and people were critical of you for having those opinions.
I would say this, Molly. When I was playing,
yeah,
I didn't say anything. Stephen A. remember when I was deactivated from the team and essentially sent home for 6-7 weeks, yeah. I didn't say anything. I said, hey, I'm happy. I won a Super Bowl. I had my time. It's time to move on. I didn't get into it. I let everybody else just say what they say. And then I finally said, man, this dude is a fraud. Y'all don't seem to understand. He's selling you on something and you're buying it. He's been doing that for years. And whether it was he's an excellent quarterback coach, whether he won the Super Bowl, which I'm grateful and thankful that he came in at a time and injected some energy into us so we can get over the hump that year and win the Super Bowl. But it's the talking behind people's back.
Yeah.
That was one of his traits in Tampa. Everything, Stephen A., I love you. I love you, Molly. You're great. But as soon as I go around the corner, I can't stand them, you know what's and this, that, and the other. I got to get it. He was doing that a lot. And you know how assistant coaches are. Assistant coaches have to feed their family, so they're not going to say nothing.
Right.
But they'll tell you on the side.
That's right.
Hey, dude, this dude here is a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I always try to tell people, man, that dude's a bad guy. Y'all don't seem to get it. Because he gets on television, and he has the scrawl on his face, and everybody likes him because he won a championship. I had to take no personal feelings with me at all about John Gruden. The guy actually tried to get me to come back to play for him the first year I retired. Bruce Allen and him called me and my agent to try to get me to come back and play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to make another playoff run, and I decided to stay at ESPN instead. But I also understood who he was. Am I surprised that this sort of behavior would come out about Coach Gruden? I'm not surprised that he would talk about people in despairing views behind their backs. Not at all. Am I surprised that he used racial insensitive things? Am I surprised that he was acting homophobic situations, talking about the LGBT community? Am I surprised that he went after the vice president, went after the commissioner? No, I'm not surprised. But what I'm surprised about is some of the words that he used. Because I never saw that side of him, Molly.
Yeah.
I can't sit here and tell you that he called somebody out their name. I never saw that. But as far
it
as...
like to your face, it was always positive.
It was
that
a
was
positive thing because I kept it positive, but I also saw through the stuff that he was putting out there. This is why I say a fraud and phony. Prior to him taking the job with ESPN, it was reported. I mean, prior to taking the job with the Raiders, he was at ESPN. It was widely reported. He's going to ESPN. 3 weeks before, 4 weeks before.
Going to the Raiders.
Going to the Raiders. John Gruden called me. I'm talking to John. Normal. We had an hour conversation about building the staff and about the players and the defense on the team. Why? But he wanted to know about a guy that I knew that he wanted to bring on his staff. But I knew that was all phony. I'm like, why are you calling me about a team? He says, well, if I take the job, I don't think I'm going to take the job. You already done agreed to take the damn job. But that's who he is. And you have to know that and take it with face value and deal with it that way. Now, as far as all the emails go, in the insensitive language in those emails, he's dead wrong. And what happened to him yesterday should have happened. And you and I had a sidebar conversation.
Yes.
And you told me, Stephen A., you said, no, you're wrong, Keyshawn.
Right.
You told me that. I said, no.
Over that one email. Yeah.
Over that one email. Right. I said, no, man, it's going to be more that's going to come.
Right.
And
that's
he,
what you said.
I said, man, it's going to be more that's going to come.
Right.
If they got 650,000 emails reported, you mean to tell me only one email?
Yeah.
No. They had a
you
whole
think he can never
span.
Come, do you think he can never come back from this, similar to the sentiment Stephen A. said earlier?
Oh, he'll never coach again.
No.
Not
no.
in the National Football League.
Never.
Now, if you ask me if some college, some certain region or something like that because they feel that certain way, they might in college, but in the pros, no, because it's very difficult to look us in the eyes and say to us, we need to play for you, and you need to be our leader.
Right.
That
couple
that,
of things.
You know,
couple of things. First of all, let me get some names out here because I'm reading from the article of the New York Times here.
Okay.
Ed Drost, D-R-O-S-T-E. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. The co-founder of Hooters.
Yeah, co-founder of Hooters.
Jim McVay, an executive who has run the Outback Bowl, annually held in Tampa, Florida, where John Gruden lives.
I believe that's the uncle of Sean McVay.
Okay. Nick Reeder, the founder of PDQ Restaurant, a Tampa-based fried chicken franchise. Mm-hmm. These are the people that were in the email chain for Bruce Allen.
Yeah.
And John Gruden.
So the reason I bring that up is because this. Listen, Keyshawn and I go back years. Molly, love you dearly. We've been working together for years and stuff like that. You don't share emails back and forth with people spanning 7 years.
No, you don't.
Where you say stuff like that. Unless
you're comfortable. Unless you're comfortable.
Well, that's a level of privilege also.
Wait a minute. Privilege.
In being comfortable and feeling out of the
bed. I guess what I'm trying to say is this. You can't communicate with us like that. You can say it once and we like, what the hell are you doing? Whoa, stop right there.
Yeah.
When you got email spanning 7 years,
yeah,
and there's an email chain involving all of that kind of language and sharing pornographic material with one another and stuff like that, because all of that's in the article here, okay, that is not an accident. Now, I'm not making accusations.
But no,
I'm saying highlighting that kind of stuff is not normal.
Oh, I was asleep, isn't it, boy? Oh, am I here by myself? I'm going silly, ain't I? Am I? What happened here? I missed the ending of that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what happened. We lost our audio, and we'll have to take care of this. Next time around, I want everybody to have a great weekend. Have a great weekend. For Mr. D, we're going to play Mr. D's favorite song. You know what it is. You know what Mr. D's favorite song is. Yeah, you got his favorite song in. Yeah, his favorite song. Here it is. Hey, everybody.
Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business like no business I know. You get word before the show has